what Guy was talking about this morning. He was talking about we're nearing the finish line as we're getting this house ready, but at times it seems like a long way away, and it's hard to keep on going across that line. And this morning's lesson is on just that. It's on finishing the race. And so let's start with a true story of a boy. I guess he was probably late preteens or just early teens, but his name was Billy. And he lived in the country. He lived in a swamp area. It was towards the turn of this last century when there were still problems with the respiratory diseases that they had as a result of that. They dealt with malaria back then. And Billy was just an unhealthy kid. He was skinny. He was shallow chested. He had just suffered the effects of that. And he thought that was just his lot in life. He said they had a teacher there by the name of George Warren Crawl. I don't know about you, but I can't remember the first or last name of just about any teacher I've had, except for maybe Mrs. Redeker when I was in kindergarten. But George Warren Crawl, they said, was something of a health crank. And one time when he was lecturing the boys, he looked at them, and Billy said it was like he looked right at him, and he said, "I dare you to be the healthiest boy in this class." And then he did look right at him, and he started pointing his finger at Billy, and he said, "I dare you to fill your body with pure water, clean air, nourishing food, healthful exercise, and become the healthiest one in this class." And there was something about that dare that got Billy's blood up. He wrote about this years later, and in fact, he did become healthy and strong. Now, wouldn't it be nice if we could all turn around our health at times and go in that kind of a direction? But much of Billy's problem was one of just, at a very young age, giving in to his illness that he didn't have to give in to. And so he got healthy. And he kept that attitude through life. You may have heard of his company. It's the Purina Company. And this man, Billy, or boy Billy, grew up into a man by the name of William Danforth. And he had this comment. He said, "The mass of people prefer the easy way." Now keep that in mind. And if you would, turn to Matthew 7 and verse 13. If it's easier for you just to follow along by listening, please do that. But Matthew chapter 7 and verse 13, I'm going to be reading from the Revised Standard Version because I really like the way that this is worded in this version. Jesus is talking to the masses, and he says this: "Enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction. And those who enter by it are many. For the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few." The way is easy that leads to death. The way is hard that leads to life. Most people go by the way that leads to death. This is a principle that William Danforth discovered 1900 years after Jesus had revealed it. The mass of people prefer the easy way. I can remember when I was reading this particular quote, and it's like a flash of lightning occurred for me. Well, maybe it's more like a little light in the dim recesses of my little brain came on. But it was a secret to life. Since the mass of people prefer the easy way, if you are willing to put in the effort, the hard work that God requires, or any worthwhile endeavor requires, that will give you a leg up and an advantage on just about anybody that you come across, whether we're talking about competition or we're talking about just the bettering of yourself, like William Danforth did with his health when he was younger and made a decision, "I'm going to do what I can about it and trust God to take care of the rest." This is one of the hardest things for us to do in life, is to do hard things. And yet, unless you do those hard things, may I suggest to you that you will live an inferior life and you will be a poor servant indeed of Christ. But if you're willing to put the extra effort into it that God requires for service, it will change your life. And so let me encourage you at the beginning of this lesson to dare to do the hard things for God, and to dare to do the hard things that is required to live for Christ. They are worth it, and it will change your life for the better. It may not make you better than the person sitting next to you, but it will make you better than you could have possibly dreamed you could have been. But if you prefer the easy way, if you want to just sit and play whatever equivalent of video games it is that you do and just sit and just slide through life, you're going to find that perhaps you didn't achieve the things that God could have allowed you to achieve. So dare to live for God is what we want to look at this morning. In Acts chapter 20 and verse 24, Paul said this, "Compelled by the Spirit, I'm going to Jerusalem, not knowing what will happen to me there. I only know that in every city the Holy Spirit warns me that prison and hardships are facing me. However, I consider my life worth nothing to me if only I may finish the race and complete." I almost said my wife worth nothing to me. I have to stop and tell you this. When we were pulling out to leave, Josh and Rebecca were parked behind us, and they started to pull out, and I started to pull out, and then all of a sudden I looked back, and Josh was coming the other direction, and so I hit the brakes, and he jumped out of the car, and what had he forgotten? He forgot Rebecca. That was for free. Let me come back. Verse 24. Paul said, "I consider my life worth nothing to me if only I may finish the race and complete the task the Lord Jesus has given me, the task of testifying to the gospel of God's grace." Now, let me give you a real-life illustration. This occurred at a track meet I saw in 2010. As a matter of fact, it was the state track meet in Texas, and it was in the 4x200-meter relay. And for those of you who aren't familiar with track, the track is an oval, which you knew, but it's 400 meters around. And so in the 4x200 relay, each one of the participants runs half a track, and then they pass a baton off, and they run back to where they started, hand the baton off, come back halfway, and then back to where they started for the finish line. They go around twice. Well, in the second exchange, I don't know if a baton was dropped. I don't remember if they went out of their exchange lane, but the exchange didn't work well, and the flag goes up indicating that this team is scratched. And one of the participants on the team that was scratched, in his anger and disappointment, sat down in his lane while the race was halfway completed for the rest of the teams. And then about 10 or 20 seconds later, he got up and he started walking the opposite direction in his lane towards the ones who were still competing in the race. Well, he showed everybody several things. One, he showed that he was angry. Wasn't his fault. He was disappointed. He had made it to state and somebody else had blown it for him. And he also showed his character. He was a loser. From beginning to end, no matter how good that young man was, at that point, on that day, at that moment, he was a loser. Don't ever forget that you have within your control the ability to either be successful for Christ or a failure for Christ. Even if the circumstances turn where the race is delayed. Now, there was another thing that happened in the same track meet. And this was in the girls' 100-meter hurdles, 100 or 110, I can't remember what it was. But anyway, the gun went off and the race was going, and there was one girl that was out in the lead, but there was another girl coming up fast. And you could tell at that last hurdle, she had the momentum and the speed to where she was going to catch that girl in first place, and she was going to win the race. But her cleat caught the top of the hurdle, and that young lady fell flat on her face. Now, I don't know if you've ever fallen flat on your face running at top speed. I bet you have never fallen flat on your face running at top speed, hitting something while you were jumping and then falling to the ground with a stick in your hand. And I'll bet you've never done that in front of thousands of people. You know what she did? She got up and she finished the race. Now, she did not finish in first or second or third. She didn't win a medal. But something happened as she was going back. It was a walk I had seen so many times that day. It was the group of people who finished out of the medal. And they would walk in a certain area in front of the crowd. And they usually walked with their heads down. A lot of them had pouty looks on their faces. But not this young lady, whose face hurt, I can guarantee you. She walked back down this walk with her shoulders squared and her head held high. And then the crowd started cheering for her as she went by. And when she heard that, she looked up and saw that it was for her. And she immediately started thanking people. She was a winner. Now, she may not have crossed that finish line first, but I guarantee you she was the winner of the day of that entire track meet. When we talk about finishing the race, sometimes it's hard. And sometimes something will have happened to you that's embarrassing, and sometimes something will happen to you that wasn't even your fault, but it delayed you. But you and I are going to heaven if we are willing to put forth the quality effort that heaven requires. We know that we're going to heaven because of the grace of God if we will live the righteous life that we're supposed to. And when we stumble, if we will get back up and finish the race. Paul said, "I consider my life worth nothing to me if only I may finish the race and complete the task." Paul had been in prison. Paul had been beaten. He had been stoned and left for dead. He said he had been in danger from men, in danger from wild animals, had been shipwrecked 3 times. He was going to his death, and he said, "I want to finish the race." This is the dare we need to pick up. This is the type of mindset that we need to have in our lives. Here's something else. Don't let somebody who's already disqualified from the race get in your way. And may I say, the only way that somebody who's already disqualified, the only way that could happen is if they give up. Or if they're already dead. 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 24 says this: "Do you not know that in a race all runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last. But we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Therefore, I do not run like a man running aimlessly. I do not fight like a man beating the air. No, I beat my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself may not be disqualified for the prize." Think about this and do an honest appraisal of your own life. Are you living a life that is worthy? Or are you running aimlessly? Are you just going through life trying to survive to the next day? Is God in His way something that you squeeze into a busy schedule? Or is God's way something that you form your schedule around? Your prayer life, your study life, your worship life. Which comes first? Is it an aimless run with no boundaries for you or even a direction? Or is it intentional? Is it purposeful? Is it determined? This is the dare that we need in our life. Mentioned before, I don't know what God has planned for us after this physical life, but I can guarantee you this, whatever we have, 70, 80, 90 years, is not the main thing. The main thing is the purpose for which you were created. It's eternity with God. I can't wait to see what it's like. That's the main thing, but if you don't cross the finish line, you can't take part in that. And you don't have to compare yourself to anyone else other than Christ. You just try to be better for yourself or be a better self than you were yesterday. And that's enough if you're doing it on God's terms. I was thinking about another race that I had seen a number of years ago. And it involves something that is one of the greatest scriptural precepts, I think, and one of the things that we allow to happen to us. Have you ever heard this? Well, I would go to worship there, but there's just a bunch of hypocrites there. Or I would do this, but those people who call themselves Christian, they're really not. Have you ever heard something like that? I wonder where they get gas, where they get groceries. Nobody who has the hypocrisy rule in their life, who it's so important that they would risk their eternal soul by not being a Christian, certainly would not risk their physical lives by going and getting groceries at a grocery store where there's hypocrites, or filling up with gas at a gas station where there's hypocrites. Why, that would be hypocritical, wouldn't it? But how often is it that we let somebody else stand in our way? Galatians 5 verse 7, you were running a good race. Who cut in on you and kept you from obeying the truth? That kind of persuasion does not come from the one who calls you. A little yeast works through the whole batch. Some of y'all will remember this. It was the 1984 Olympics. There was an American hero by the name of Mary Decker. I can't remember what it was. Maybe the 5,000 meter race. It was a long race. She was the favorite. There was a girl by the name, or a young lady by the name of Zola Budd, who came. She didn't even have shoes on her feet, and she was challenging Mary Decker. And Zola Budd, accidentally or on purpose, there is controversy here, tripped Mary Decker. And you know what Mary Decker did? She lay on the side of the track, and she grabbed the side of her leg, and she rolled back and forth, and she cried, and she hit the ground, and she didn't finish the race. And she couldn't have won the race, probably. But as it turned out, her injury was not quite that bad. It was her spirit that was injured. There are going to be people who make you mad. There are going to be people who say they're Christians who don't act like Christians. There are going to be people who let you down. There's going to be people who betray you. What would it have been like if our Savior allowed the betrayals that were done against him to prevent him from allowing himself to be that great sacrifice that we might live forever? Do not allow somebody to cut in on you to the point where it causes you not to finish the race. The last passage is this. It's Paul. It's towards the end of his life. 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 7. After saying about 5 years earlier, I don't consider myself yet to have taken hold of the prize, look what he says now when he knows death is upon him. 2 Timothy 4:7, I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but all who have longed for his appearing. Don't you want to be able to say at the end of your life, I have finished the race? It's the only thing that will matter at that time. And even though you and I don't deserve it, even though you and I have made a lot of mess-ups on the race, and sometimes we've impeded others, if we'll finish the race, we'll get the crown. And we need to dare to live in such a way. The invitation's open. If you're ready to become a Christian this morning, we would love to help you with that.